Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Sleater, Judge Johnson, Judge Hooten, the Honorable Randall J. Sleater presiding.
And good morning. Once again, welcome. This is March 3. This is the first of three oral hearings that this panel will consider. We then have non-oral matters to consider after that. This first matter is file A21104 in the matter of the welfare of CRM. A child. A couple of preliminary matters. Everything is pretty much the same, other than we are not in the same space, of course, since we're virtual. No recording or reproduction of the proceeding is allowed by any party absent pre-approval by the judicial branch. The recording will be made available in the usual course on the judicial branch's website within 24 hours. If at any time either counsel you or we can't see or hear you, mostly hear you is the critical thing. The marshal is instructed to stop the clock. You should see the clock. The point being is we will then hopefully freeze when you freeze and unfreeze when you unfreeze as well, so that we don't lose any time. We've had pretty good luck for the most part the last few months with this technology. And we do ask that you identify yourself when you begin your arguments. Appellant will have 15 minutes per usual, respondent 15 minutes to reply, and then rebuttal 5 minutes for appellant's counsel. And so, as I say, if you just identify your full name when you begin, we'll start with appellant's counsel and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Creston Gackle. I represent the appellant CRM in this matter. This case is about whether a juvenile, a child, should be required as the sole consequence of a delinquency adjudication to register as a predatory offender for the next 10 years. The essential issue here is how juveniles are on the one hand treated with care, concern, and an eye toward rehabilitation, while on the other being automatically subjected to a profound disability. This case comes to this court at an unusual posture. At the tail end of juvenile court jurisdiction, the end of the child's time in juvenile court, that is, when the district court decided to adjudicate and impose predatory offender registration on CRM. This case is unique in that the district court not only made the decision to adjudicate and impose registration at the very end of the case, it did so knowing that registration would be the sole consequence of adjudication. We now know from developed U.S. Supreme Court case law that juveniles as a class are different. Beginning with Roper and flowing through Graham and Miller v. Alabama, the highest court has recognized that young people have a number of things that make them categorically different. They're more open and likely to change. They're more susceptible to outside pressures and influences. And when faced with adult-level consequences, they suffer to a greater degree than an adult who did the same thing.
Mr. Gackle, I noticed in the briefing that you referenced a lack of best interest findings with regard to the court's adjudication. Isn't it true both the statute as well as the rule do not require best interest findings? The respondent points out there are findings, of course, by the court that would support its ruling. But in other words, the best interest relates to disposition, which, if I understand correctly by the record and the court's order, there actually was no disposition. There was simply an adjudication, which the statute makes mandatory for a court, unless under subdivision 7, the court finds reason to continue for dismissal, which, of course, previously happened here. So that being the case, how would it be an abuse of discretion for a court who's not required to make findings to simply adjudicate, and then, of course, the consequences you're referring to occur?
Thank you, Your Honor. What we are saying is that the adjudication and dispositional sort of statute and rules should be read in conjunction with another. In practice, on disposition, which the court did technically hold a separate disposition hearing just after the trial in this matter, after a finding of guilt. At that point is when courts or juvenile courts consider whether to stay adjudication, continue the matter for dismissal, or adjudicate and impose dispositional consequences. Here, what we are saying is that the court knew that by adjudicating, it would be essentially ending the case and imposing registration. It acknowledged as much in its order when it said that continuing the matter for dismissal would result in an end to the juvenile court proceedings. You know, it's all wrapped up together, Your Honor. So under 260B.198, subdivision 1B, the court does have to consider and explain why the best interests are served by the particular disposition. Here we're saying adjudication, the decision to adjudicate is tied into disposition because the sole outcome of adjudication is imposition of predatory offender registration. That's all the court really did here. It didn't counsel the child, it didn't impose a fine or restitution, it didn't make specific findings on the juvenile's mental health or chemical dependency treatment needs as is under the disposition statute, it didn't impose community work service or any sanction for not completing that within the requisite time. It just ended the case.
Isn't that a natural consequence? In other words, the court doesn't include in an order, and at least when I was in juvenile proceedings, I don't remember ever ordering registration. We just were acknowledged that and might be part of a colloquy with an individual who's pleading guilty to understand that that is a consequence of it. But again, isn't that, and I understand that was the argument made. And so, as you point out, the court was aware of it, but also explained in the order that there'd be no consequence whatsoever if there's no adjudication. I guess what I'm trying to get at is, what's this particular abuse of discretion that occurred when a judge orders adjudication in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. So what we're saying is that the juvenile code requires the court to consider the outcome of its decision to adjudicate and provide procedural due process that accounts for that dispositional outcome. We believe that the predatory offender registration is a dispositional outcome in this particular case because the court didn't order literally anything else to happen here. The district court has essentially reached beyond its juvenile court jurisdiction to impose predatory offender registration as the sole consequence of adjudication and placed this, you know, reach beyond what it could do under the juvenile code.
Can I stop you right there? Because, isn't the court under the law allowed to make a decision as to stay or not stay the adjudication of the juvenile? There's no requirement in the law that says the court has to do this, or has to adjudicate or has to continue a stay of adjudication. Am I correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. Yes, as long as the district court links the finding of guilt to the requirements of the juvenile code, which is deemed necessary for the rehabilitation of the child.
And what I'm looking at, I'm just looking at the written findings the court did make. And if I had to summarize those findings, the court basically said, yes, I stayed adjudication of this matter, or I continued this matter without adjudication. I gave this juvenile every chance to be rehabilitated. And I've had this juvenile in on multiple occasions because the juvenile hasn't cooperated with our efforts for rehabilitation. And therefore, I don't think that this juvenile is deserving of the continued stay of adjudication. Why is that analysis? And I have to not only consider the interest of the juvenile, there's nothing else I can do for the juvenile because he's aging out of the juvenile system. There's nothing else that can be done here other than I do not find that the stay of adjudication is justified in this case where he's had all these chances and he basically blew them.
Thank you, Your Honor. What we would say is that in choosing between two dispositional alternatives, so staying adjudication versus adjudicating, the district court was required to analyze the sole impact of its decision, predatory offender registration, and whether that would be appropriate for CRM specifically. It could have, you know, imposed a fine, restitution, et cetera. It didn't do so, and it didn't explain why the best interests were served by adjudication under the disposition statute. The district court should have, as procedural due process, given CRM a hearing on whether predatory offender registration would be appropriate for CRM and his situation. Otherwise, you know, the difference between continuing and adjudicating, there's really, you know, no difference except the juvenile court trying to reach beyond its jurisdiction and impact the child's next 10 years of adult life.
But I mean, you've already indicated that whether to adjudicate or not adjudicate is clearly within the discretion of the court.
Yes,
and
it is.
The court in this case could have, if the court wanted to, and have adjudicated without doing this stay and without going through all these efforts toward rehabilitation. Isn't that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. We're just saying that the court should have made very specific findings about whether the sole consequence, offender registration, was linked to the child's best interests or necessary for rehabilitation.
But isn't that the predatory offender registration, isn't that a civil penalty that attaches? I mean, that's something that is by law, and that's not within the discretion of the court. Am I correct?
There's a few things on
it. It is linked to an adjudication.
It is linked to an adjudication, yes, Your Honor. What we're saying is the juvenile court, separate and apart from the requirements under predatory offender registration, has separate responsibilities under the juvenile code. The juvenile code and should be read in consonance with the predatory offender statute and vice versa. The predatory offender registration is not a rehabilitative consequence. The court has deemed it not punitive, but instead regulatory. And regulatory is not rehabilitative. The district court never made a finding that registration would be appropriate for this particular juvenile.
Can I ask you this question though? Where in the code, the juvenile code, the rules are in the statutes, is it required to make best interest factors before a penalty of sexual offender registration is required?
Your Honor, in practice,
is there anything that requires the court to do that?
In practice, Your Honor, under 260B.198 subdivision 1B, the court has to link its disposition to the child's best interests and necessity for rehabilitation. The court also has to look to the purpose of the juvenile code under 260B.001. And in considering whether to continue adjudication, the court does have to consider best interests and public safety. So we think it's, you know, to read it all together is to give effectuation to all those terms.
But there's nothing that separately addresses the issue of whether best interests have to be shown before a penalty of sex offender registration is imposed. Am I correct?
We're saying that that's a requirement of procedural due process and how the juvenile code should be interpreted.
And what case or statute or that can you direct us to that would support that proposition?
Well, Your Honor, in the briefing, we did do some procedural due process analysis and indicate that it would be necessary before such an imposition of a 10-year registration period for a kid would be imposed. And that's what we're pointing to, the 14th Amendment, the corresponding provision under the Minnesota Constitution. The issue is, you know, how can you really reconcile that he's on paper registration, he's on predatory offender registration when the juvenile court jurisdiction doesn't exist? I mean, the corresponding situation in criminal court wouldn't happen. The adults would be on probation, and you know, it's far different in this scenario than it would be for a similarly situated adult. The only purpose of adjudication in this case is to force him to register, and that's sort of how this case got all backwards, Your Honor. Is the case initially began with a suspension of the proceedings. The court really wasn't involved except approving the continuance or dismissal agreement. I know we went back and forth, you know, on this probation issue, but it really wasn't probation. It was a suspension of the proceedings, and no finding of guilt had ever been made until the very end of the case. And that's when the juvenile court really had to impose, had to apply its responsibilities. You know, what we're asking the court to do is to ask, to require the district court to have some additional process here, a hearing with argument to determine if registration is an appropriate consequence for this particular juvenile. you know, otherwise it's essentially a criminal sentence to 10 years of predatory offender registration. The court.
But even assuming it came back to the court for that kind of determination, I mean, you're making the imposition of a predatory offender's registration requirement sound like it's within the discretion of the district court.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I don't know of any law that would support that. I mean, it seems to be a legislative determination by statute that if you are adjudicated, certain crimes, that you do have to comply with a civil regulatory statute.
I understand, Your Honor. There's several problems with that. First, the predatory offender registration statute has evolved many times since the court last ruled on it. Many substantial changes, expansions of the time, length of registration, restrictions. There is a liberty interest here in not having to register as a predatory offender for this particular juvenile. And it's contrary to the rehabilitative purpose for him to face this registration period. What the real problem here is that, you know, he's been branded, he's facing a lot of practical collateral consequences of not getting this and that job, not getting into a treatment provider, and all of this because the court doesn't view the predatory offender registration for this particular juvenile as a problem. I mean, he doesn't have recourse to the legislature. Juveniles aren't represented there.
Could I ask one question, Judge Slater, before?
Yes, you may.
And then, so, Mr. Gackel, is it fair to say that with your first argument, you're essentially arguing that it's an abuse of discretion for a district judge to adjudicate rather than continue a case when we get to the very end of the jurisdictional period? Stop, question mark. Is that your argument, basically?
Yes, to the extent that they don't link the disposition to rehabilitation.
So if the district court does not continue, but rather adjudicates and has no rehabilitative, has no rehabilitative outcome, then that's an abuse of discretion.
Yes.
Thanks.
Very well, Mr. Gackel, you'll have 5 minutes at rebuttal. And so counsel for respondent, you may identify yourself for the record and then proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, Terrence Swihart, assistant Rice County attorney on behalf of respondent Rice County. In this case, two issues are presented to the court. The first is whether the district court abuses discretion in adjudicating CRM as delinquent for the criminal sexual conduct third degree, which resulted in the mandatory registration as a predatory offender. Related to that registration is whether that requirement that you register as a predatory offender violates his due process rights. With respect to the adjudication, this court generally upholds the district court's decision to adjudicate a child delinquent if the district court acts within its broad discretion, mindful of the child's best interest, and protect the public. And generally, the district court has two options with adjudication. One is to adjudicate delinquent, or the other is to continue adjudication. And when continuing adjudication, the court considers the child's best interest in addition to the interest of the public to protect the public. In this case, the district court specifically addressed the whether a stay of adjudication or continuing adjudication was appropriate in this case, and specifically noted that it would not be in the best interest of the child if the court continued adjudication. And also based on his consistent violation of the terms of the continuance for dismissal, that it wasn't in the public's public safety interest that the court continued the adjudication. As a result, the district court adjudicated the child delinquent. Now, I think then that as a result of that adjudication, the consequence is the registration as a predatory offender. And I think appellant is trying to bootstrap the mandatory requirement of registration as a disposition and therefore requiring the district court to outline specifically why registration is consistent with the juvenile code, rehabilitation, the best interest of the child. And I believe that and how that is in the public safety, interest of the public safety. But this court has already addressed the issue of registration with respect to a juvenile. And the court has specifically noted that there is no statutory authority or statutory requirement that the district court make specific findings with respect to the registration requirement. And in fact, it noted that the registration requirement is a statutory mandate without exception.
Well, so can I just stop you, because I'm sure the appellant will correct me if I'm summarizing his position incorrectly, but as I understand it, the appellant is arguing that the adjudication right at the tail end of the jurisdiction of the court, where without any concern regarding whether this helps to rehabilitate this juvenile, is an abuse of discretion, because it doesn't do anything to help this juvenile. The jurisdiction is up, and that there is nothing about how this would be in the juvenile's best interest, since the court loses jurisdiction anyway. And I think that's the first part of their argument. And then the second part of the argument is there's a harsh consequence to that adjudication, which is the predatory offender registration, which the juvenile doesn't even get a chance to contest because of this result of adjudication, which affects the juvenile's due process rights. How do you address those legal arguments?
Sure. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you. And I'd like to address the second point that you make first, with respect to that's a harsh outcome. And this court has addressed the harsh outcome in the case which I cite in my brief, which is JRZ. There, the court specifically noted that this may have been a harsh outcome. And there, it was an 11-year-old child that was convicted, or at least adjudicated delinquent, for third-degree criminal sexual conduct. As a result, the 11-year-old was required to register as a predatory offender under 243.166. The court noted that although this is harsh, the decision concerning the reach of the statute rests with the legislature, and noted that to review the prudence of requiring all juveniles to adjudicate for criminal sexual conduct to register as predatory offenders is within the province, if you will, of the legislature. So with respect to your second point, this court has already noted that this is indeed a harsh outcome, but it's not for the court to amend the statute or to grant any relief regarding the mandatory requirement for registration. And along the same lines as that harsh outcome, this court in CDN had noted, and with respect to appellant's argument, that the child will be impacted with respect to employment and other collateral consequences. This court in CDN had noted that registration only requires juveniles to inform police of their address. It restricts neither their access to employment, education, nor their freedom to travel. And that although it may linger for years, it is not itself punitive. So this court has noted that while the registration is harsh, it doesn't have the impact that appellant argues that it will. With respect to your first point of the best interest, I think the court in its order specifically addressed the reasoning for its decision that, in effect, it did order a disposition in February, I believe, of 2019, where it provided roughly 28 conditions that the juvenile was required to comply with, and that those conditions would have, had he complied, would have satisfied the purpose of the juvenile code, which is to promote public safety and reduce juvenile delinquency. But in this case, the juvenile unfortunately didn't comply with any of those, with the majority of those conditions. And as a result, was found back in front of the court in June of 2020. And the court noted that it provided the juvenile with all the options that it could, that unfortunately at this time, based on the timing, the last day of the trial was in fact the child's birthday the following day, and that because of the general disposition under 260B.193, subdivision 5, where the juvenile, where the court loses jurisdiction at the child's age of 19, the court found that there is nothing more, no meaningful disposition that it can provide within one day. But it did provide meaningful disposition prior to that, prior to the adjudication. So I think the court has met, did meet the best interest and found specifically in its order that continuing the jurisdiction, continuing adjudication would not be in the child's best interest.
And Mr. Sweetheart, I'm sorry, you didn't finish your thought.
No, I'm done, Your Honor. Thank you.
As a, what is the practical difference from a criminal history record if the court had dismissed versus the adjudication? And if there is a difference, is that perhaps, and I didn't see that it was argued, at least from at the hearing itself, and I don't see it specifically in the brief, but is there a difference that would follow him with the adjudication that could affect employment, rental, and all those sorts of issues as it would an adult, but with a dismissal, there'd be a lack of a record?
That's a good question, Your Honor. I know I don't know as far as for a criminal history standpoint, would that show up on a criminal history check for example, housing. I know as a collateral consequence, for example, that he's not permitted under Chapter 624 from possessing a firearm as a result of his crime of violence. But would this adjudication as a juvenile in juvenile court appear on a criminal history for a rental, for example, or a job employment? I honestly don't know how that would impact him.
And part of the reason I ask, and I think this was raised in the briefing, it's my understanding that the violations were mostly, maybe all, related to chemical dependency and not completing chemical dependency related treatment, but that his sex offender evaluation suggested, as I understand, that he was not a predatory offender and so forth, which may have played into perhaps the agreement to continue for dismissal. But am I right in that understanding? And as part of why I asked, if there was an effect you were aware of or the court was aware of, whether that should be perhaps a best interest finding in the court could make separate from the predatory offender registration issue.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. So are you saying that the violations of the disposition conditions related to specifically to drugs, that it wouldn't, that it shouldn't be considered in his adjudication for crime sex?
Well, at least that's the sense I got, and the issue we're dealing with here today, and that appellant's most concern, and certainly is a response that he will have to deal with, is related specifically to the sex offense adjudication, not the drug adjudication. And I understood that the violations seem to be focused heavily because, in fact, twice I understand he nearly died from overdoses. Is that picture of what was occurring here important? And I guess my question is that perhaps the sort of finding a court could have distinguished it didn't, and I, in terms of adjudicating one but not the other?
And I don't know, Your Honor, if you can really distinguish between the both. I think chemical dependency and criminal behavior really are jointly, you know, you really can't sever them. I think an individual such as the juvenile in this case had significant drug problems, as noted by his overdose in the court's order. And then also in the court noted that he did not develop individual responsibility because of his violations. So it all, I think, is intertwined. Not, you can't distinguish between, well, he just violated the conditions as they relate to drugs, and therefore we're not going to adjudicate on the crim sex. I think they're all intertwined, and you can't distinguish between one or the other. And so I think the court did not abuse its discretion when it adjudicated for the criminal sexual conduct in this case.
Mr. Sweetheart, I want to ask you about the Boutine case, which is invoked by the second issue that's raised by the respondent. And respondent does make a good point, at least on its face, that it's a 22-year-old case. And I notice the court focused on a lack of liberty interest. And the one requirement the court referenced was notifying of address. And as appellant points out, there's obviously been significant requirements added since that date. I understand your position that that's the law and it is the law, but would you agree there's a point perhaps where that's a reasonable argument that the liberty interest that was considered by the Supreme Court in 1999 as the requirements enhance is different such that there is a point where that might be a cognizable issue to at least pursue the due process claim thereafter?
I think the passage of time does not by itself invalidate a statute. I think that while Bedeen was 1999, you have subsequent statutes that specifically relate to juveniles, such as the CDN case. And that was a 1997 case, and then also JRZ, which is a 2002 case. And each of those, you know, for example, CDN adopted the reasoning in Manning, State v. Manning, where it's not a punitive statute. So I don't think that the passage of time in this case renders this this issue as one of violative of his due process rights. That I think Bedeen, the gist of the statute, or at least the, you know, the basis for registering remained the same. For example, in Bedeen, he wasn't convicted of criminal sexual conduct, but he was required to register because he was convicted of an offense which arose out of the same set of circumstances that led to the criminal sexual conduct charge. That's similar to the statute that remains today. So while perhaps other additional requirements are imposed of an individual who is required to register, ultimately the basis for registering, were you convicted or petitioned for and subsequently adjudicated delinquent for a charge enumerated within the statute, and that's the case. Ultimately, this is the court, you know, the plethora of cases have indicated this is not a punitive statute. And because it's not punitive, but set civil in nature, the case law indicates that it is not does not violate due process rights either in an adult or a juvenile. And I think that still holds true today. And I would request that the court affirm the order of the district court, both with respect to adjudication, and then also find that the statute is in fact constitutional, does not violate appellant's constitutional due process rights. Thank you.
Any other questions either judge have? Very well then, Mr. Gackle, thank you, Mr. Sweetheart. Mr. Gackle, you now have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would just like to turn to the practical consequences of this case. CRM is facing registration for the first 10 years of his adult life, the first 10 years of his adult working life, education, developing adult friendships, partnerships, finding and settling down in a home and community. It really is a fact question for the juvenile court whether this particular juvenile should face predatory offender registration. There, as the court noted, there are many issues in this case, but not really with sexual predator reoffense. It is correct that the juvenile didn't complete all of the programming, but he did successfully complete the Village Ranch program. It just didn't graduate from aftercare due to behavioral and alcohol issues. And I would record cite to number 66 in the district court file. This is ultimately an issue with dependency rather than sexual predator offense.
Can I stop you though? Because I want to follow up with some questions that Judge Slater raised with regard to the Bedeen case. Would you agree that the Bedeen case does not support your argument that there's a liberty interest here involved? In fact, the court in that case definitely found that there's no recognizable liberty interest in being free from having to update address information with the police.
Yes, Your Honor, I do agree that the Bedeen case does not support that there's a liberty interest. I would just point out that the Bedeen case is now over 20 years old. The statute has substantially changed since that time to include far more requirements, including requirements on healthcare, and that the practical consequence of predatory offender registration nowadays is denial of employment and housing and treatment opportunities. The other point is that this case is fairly unique in that we're asking the court to ensure that the juvenile court is upholding its responsibilities in determining whether predatory offender registration is appropriate for a particular juvenile. We're not challenging the constitutionality of the statute itself. We're saying there's this little bit of due process that needs to be inserted in.
But the statute doesn't provide for any discretionary calls by the district court on whether there's a penalty imposed or not under the statute. Am I correct?
I mean, yes, Your Honor.
Wouldn't that require that we rewrite the statute? And we obviously, as the judicial branch, can't do that.
No, Your Honor. We think it's under procedural due process, the court can interpret what was appropriate for due process before something is applied like that. I mean, it's why we have, you know, trials before finding of guilt. It's part of process rather than result.
But you're asking us to basically overrule Boutin.
Yes.
And obviously as a error correcting court, we can't do that. Am I correct?
Yes, I understand. I've read many of those cases, Your Honor. I would just pose this hypothetical to the court. You know, imagine that the legislature, instead of, you know, it amended the predatory offender registry in a really significant way, as it has over the years, to include something like the death penalty if you failed to comply with the requirements. Would this court, the Court of Appeals, say, well, there's no liberty interest still, we can't overrule precedent? No, I think this court would say, we'll take a hard look at the statute, how it operates today as opposed to 20 years ago, how it functions in practice, what we know now about kids and neuroscience, and make a reasoned decision based on that information. Reliance on precedent, Your Honor, that is that old is frankly an out that fails to give CRM and the Minnesota community the analysis and the result that justice demands. The court is not only bound by precedent, it is bound by the Constitution of Minnesota and the United States. This is a due process case, and pure reliance on precedent without more analysis beyond that, you know, only results in justice delayed. And justice delayed is justice denied. CRM is facing problems right now due to registration and treatment and employment, and really he shouldn't. I know it's a fact question that's not before the court, but there's a lot of facts here that suggest he's not someone that should be on the predatory offender registry. Your Honor, ultimately this case is in a different place than we were 20 years ago, and it's also in a different place than we find many other kids facing this sort of thing. It's at the very end of the case in the juvenile court, instead of offering rehabilitation on a finding of guilt, offered registration. Thank you.
Very well, thank you to both counsel. We appreciate your answers to our questions and for your briefing. We will now take the matter under advisement and issue an order in the statutory timeline for a juvenile proceeding. You each have a good day. Thank you. We will have a short recess while we wait for the attorneys to appear on the next matter.